Today is Thursday, October 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, how the ongoing impeachment inquiry may affect American politics as the president continues attacking the Democrat-led impeachment inquiry.
I've had the Mueller witch hunt, the Russia witch hunt. I have witch hunts every week. I say, what's the witch hunt this week?
Also ahead, reports indicate Turkish forces and their allies have attacked Syrian government troops in the northeast, and how the ongoing protests in Hong Kong are affecting its immigrant population. Those stories and more next. Wednesday was a day of counter-argument by congressional Republicans, the day after America's top envoy in Ukraine gave House impeachment investigators a detailed roadmap of President Donald Trump's drive to squeeze that country's leaders for damaging information about his Democratic political rivals. Most Republicans were still standing by Mr. Trump, but in delicately calibrated ways after the closed-door testimony by acting Ambassador William Taylor. As lawmakers struggled to balance support for Trump with uncertainty over what might still may emerge, some were willing to acknowledge the strains that they were facing. President Trump derided the process while speaking at an address in Pennsylvania.
I've had the Mueller witch hunt, the Russia witch hunt. I have witch hunts every week. I say, what's the witch hunt this week? They can't beat us at the ballot box. They cannot beat us at the ballot box. So they want to try and beat us the old-fashioned way, which is not very nice. They are a nasty group of people.
Now, to learn more about how the political impeachment process is affecting American politics, I spoke with Craig Albert, political science professor at Augusta University. Craig, I wanted to ask you this question. The president repeatedly calls this impeachment inquiry a witch hunt, that it's not constitutional. And I wanted to get your opinion on how that could affect the national political landscape moving forward, since this is an election year.
He definitely is able to create a narrative, especially for his supporters or those independents or folks that voted for the first time in the 2016 elections for him, that this is a witch hunt. And that's going to help people that might not wanted to come out to vote, period, those first-timers in 2016 that don't want to vote again, that might create a catalyst for them to actually go and vote this time. So he's saying this is a witch hunt. You put me in, you voted for the first time, and now they're trying to get rid of me. So most of those individuals stayed home during the 2018 congressional elections, but this might actually, his narrative might actually force them to come back out to the polls to vote for him for re-election, because they see it as a witch hunt against themselves as well. What helps the president's argument for this, and I'm not stating whether this is a fact or not, I'm just stating that it helps, is that from the day he was inaugurated, there have been some people wishing for his impeachment, and they've said it in the media, and they said that they were going to do this, some congressional members. So combine those two, Trump's narrative, with the fact that some members of the Democratic Party have been saying they wanted to impeach him since he took office literally that day, that helps solidify his narrative for his base, his supporters, some independents, and those first-time voters that might not wanted to vote again will come out for him.
What about the process that's taking place within the halls of the House of Representatives? We've had a series of behind-closed-doors meetings. Yesterday, several Republicans tried to bust into and disrupt a meeting, and they had to be escorted out by the sergeant of arms. What kind of effect is that having on the American political process?
I think it depends whether you lean Democrat or lean Republican over which side you think is at fault for this, what kind of effect it's going to have. For the Democrats, it's going to bolster them to want to move forward with a full official impeachment inquiry in the Judiciary Committee and then in a full vote in the House of Representatives. For Republicans, that move bolsters them. It shows more support for President Trump. For Republicans, it shows a solidified front. Many people think that the Republicans may be experiencing kind of like a break between the two sides of the Republican Party, the pro-Trump and the more establishment side. And these types of stunts try to demonstrate that everybody's behind Trump on this and that perhaps it is a witch hunt by the Democrats. For those that support Democrats, they see completely opposite. They see the Republicans as trying to disrupt the political process, the constitutional political process of impeachment hearings. And we really don't know. The Constitution is silent about how an impeachment inquiry is to be started. So that's supposed to be led by the Speaker of the House. And however that is arranged is what is constitutional. So that's up to anybody's interpretation of whether it's just or proper or judicially processed properly.
If we take a look at some of the testimony that has occurred this week and what's been released to the media, does it appear as if, as the president says, this is a witch hunt, or is there still some substance leading into this inquiry process that the Democrats are leading that could eventually lead to articles of impeachment?
If we looked at it objectively, just as a political scientist, for instance, and take any personal views I have out of this situation, there does seem to be, if arranged properly or told properly, a series of events that looks like there could be an abuse of power somehow, some type of an abuse of power. Whether or not that level of an abuse of power merits the constitutional requirement for impeachment hearings is another argument that you have to have. It can go either way. It just depends on the evidence. For me, it comes to the fact of whether or not the president knowingly and intended to do so. Did he try to have Ukraine interfere by investigating Vice President Biden? If that's the case, then I think it warrants a full impeachment hearing with the full House investigating it and voting on it or not.
Craig Albert is a professor of political science at Augusta University. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Current and former National Security Council staff are slated for impeachment interviews. The AP's Mike Gracia has those details.
Two key witnesses could appear before House impeachment investigators next week. Four people familiar with the inquiry schedule tell the Associated Press closed-door interviews have been tentatively scheduled with National Security Council Russia and Europe Director Tim Morrison and former NSC staffer Charles Kupperman. Morrison and Kupperman are key because they may have been listening to President Donald Trump's July call with Ukraine's president that is at the center of the impeachment probe. Kupperman's interview was tentatively scheduled for Monday. Morrison would appear Thursday. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Turkish forces and their allies attacked Syrian government troops in northeastern Syria Thursday, killing some of them. And they also clashed with Kurdish-led fighters. That's according to the state news agency in Damascus and a war monitoring group. The fighting underscored the risks of violence as multiple and often opposing armed forces jostle for new positions in the tight quarters of the northeastern border zone. A worry to some has been the prospect of a collision between forces of the Syrian government and those backed by Turkey, which includes Syrian rebel fighters and Islamic extremists opposed to President Bashar al-Assad. All sides have said that they are abiding by a ceasefire as they implement a Russian-Turkish agreement that divides the border region. But frictions could undermine the effort for a resolution on the border, which U.S. forces were abruptly ordered to leave earlier this month, allowing Turkey to launch its invasion against Kurdish fighters. The Syrian Democratic Forces commander-in-chief, Mazlum Abdi, spoke today about the latest developments. He said Donald Trump emphasized that American forces will remain in the region. He also spoke about the agreement between Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Russian President Vladimir Putin, their agreement in Sochi. He stated that the SDF has reservations on all 13 points of the agreement and that they are discussing these points with Russia. Mr. Abdi also emphasized that there is still no agreement. However, the ceasefire for now is in place and they are sticking to that agreement. Joining us from the Pentagon is VOA correspondent Carla Babb with more. Carla, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Carla, what can you tell us about U.S. forces in the region now?
Well, United States forces have pulled out of some areas of Syria. We've discussed they have gone into western Iraq, but then basically the game plan, as Secretary of Defense Mark Esper had said, was that the United States was going to continue the counter-ISIS fight from western Iraq. Iraq apparently was not consulted on this. So the Iraqis said that no, they did not want additional U.S. forces in their country, and the additional forces have to go. So now the plan that the secretary says is that these forces will either move to perhaps Kuwait, perhaps Qatar, or perhaps even back to the United States as they try to develop the next phase of the fight against Islamic State.
As far as Secretary Esper is concerned, how is he viewing this entire situation with Turkey incursion into the Syrian area?
Well, you can tell by everything he says, he is incredibly frustrated with Turkey. I know that the president of the United States was touting this as a great success, but he took a very different tone when he was speaking to his NATO allies today. He said Turkey put us all in a very terrible situation. He called the incursion unwarranted, and he essentially relayed the fact that the U.S. was forced to choose between an action that could damage the fight against Islamic State that they've been working hard at for 4 years, or could damage the NATO alliance. And he said, in fact, you know, if the United States had stood its ground and had threatened Turkey with aircraft or had kept its American troops there, the discussion today would not be why did the U.S. pull out, but it would be will this NATO alliance continue? Because that would have been a direct conflict between two NATO allies. So you can tell that he is very frustrated. He is not saying that the United States made the wrong decision, in his opinion, but he is very frustrated with the situation.
In terms of the NATO alliance, we only have about 20 seconds left. What is his major concern at this point?
Well, the major concern is that allies are partnering with Russia. And just as you mentioned with the SDF commander, Abdi, saying that they do not necessarily trust Russia, he is warning that when you partner with Russia, you better make sure that you've got everything straight, because the SDF has made it clear that they don't want the United States out of this mix. They feel that the United States is their protector, even after this betrayal, as many people are calling. And because the Russians have turned on them before, they point to Afrin, saying that the Russians and the Turks basically steamrolled them there, and they want the U.S. to be involved, and the U.S. wants others involved. That's why Esper is also talking to the United Kingdom and France today about getting more involved in Syria.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
India and Pakistan signed an agreement on Thursday allowing Indian pilgrims to cross the border to a Sikh shrine in Pakistan, demonstrating a rare cooperation between the nuclear-armed rivals at a time of tension and clashes elsewhere on their frontier. A member of India's Interior Ministry made the announcement.
The corridor is open from dawn to dusk. Pilgrims traveling in the morning will have to come back by evening the same day. There is no night stay envisaged under the agreement. The corridor will be operational throughout the year, except on a few notified days, which will be informed well in advance.
The PAC will introduce a visa-free access from India to Pakistani town of Kharagpur, a home of a temple that marks the site where the founder of Sikhism, Guru Nanak, died. Prime Minister Imran Khan will formally open the border to pilgrims on November 9th. The Sikh minority in India has long sought easier access to the temple, which is just over the border in Muslim-majority Pakistan. And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say that the planets of our solar system were formed about 4.5 billion years ago. Soon afterwards, the Earth and the Moon became a veritable shooting gallery as they were bombarded with waves of comets, asteroids, and even protoplanets that flowed past them. New research led by geologist Stephen Moisish of the University of Colorado at Boulder suggests the extensive bombardment was caused by a solar system-altering event 4.48 billion years ago. The event, called the Giant Planet Migration, was when the solar system's largest planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, for some still unknown reason, began to move from their positions near the Sun to their present positions in the outer solar system. Moisish and his team found evidence that debris was scattered, with some of it crashing into Earth and its then young moon as the big planets migrated. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Hong Kong's 580,000 non-Chinese residents, many of whom have been in the city for generations, have so far played a very quiet role in the anti-government protests that have shaken the semi-autonomous Chinese city. Slowly, they are making their feelings clear. Many support the protests, but others say they are an inconvenience and want their adopted home to return to normal. Almost all say the actual demonstration line is one they will not cross, as they fear arrest and therefore deportation. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Hong Kong.
Prabhu Singh has made Hong Kong his home for 25 years, selling Indian sweets at a tiny shop in a warren-like den full of other Asian businessmen. Nearly every weekend for the last 4 months, anti-government protests have traversed the road in front of his shop, and police recently fired water cannon at a nearby mosque frequented by the South Asian community. That incident prompted the city's chief executive to apologize to the community, many of whom have been settled here for generations. And so he says, life is a little less sweet now.
I love sweets.
He's one of the 8% of residents of this semi-autonomous Chinese city who are not ethnically Chinese. As such, they don't have all the same rights as their Chinese counterparts, regardless of whether they were born here or how long they've been here. And that puts him and his colleagues on the sideline. Many told VOA off camera that they support the protests in spirit, but won't join them because, as immigrants, being arrested would result in swift deportation. Singh is careful with his words.
Protester, I think it's like they are for the betterment of Hong Kong. They demand something and the government not agree on that, when I'm thinking like that.
It's a stark contrast from the handful of visiting foreigners who have enthusiastically joined the protests. They say this is everyone's fight.
I have no family connections to Hong Kong, but we got to fight for freedom no matter who it is.
That's a tougher line for longtime residents to walk. Filipino residents make up one-third of the city's immigrant workforce. They say the protests have been disruptive.
To join the protest? No.
Why?
We just listen to the news, what's happening outside.
We're not praying.
But we're not able to join. No. Filipinos don't like.
Why?
Because it's caused problem for us. We're just alien here. We're not resident in Hong Kong.
Nuki, an Indonesian national, has lived here for 11 years as a domestic worker.
We are hopefully is Hong Kong more peaceful like before. We are second home. I love Hong Kong. We love Hong Kong.
Chinese Hong Kongers say they understand this dilemma. This week, in the wake of the mosque incident, they gathered near Chung King Mansions, the immigrant hub, to show their support for immigrants. And they say they'll be their voice. Anita Powell, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Anita Powell also reports Joshua Wong, the 23-year-old poster boy for Hong Kong's anti-government protests, was defiant as he stood in front of the city's legislative council complex to announce Thursday that he is the only candidate among more than 1,000 aspirants running for the 479-seat district council who has yet to be approved. Wong says that he visited the Electoral Affairs Commission Thursday to learn more about why he has not been approved to run on the November 24th poll, and he was told that the officer responsible was out sick. In a statement, the commission confirmed that the officer is on sick leave until further notice and would be replaced. The European Parliament gave on Thursday its annual prize for the defense of human rights to Ilham Tohti, a blow to China where the Uyghur activist is serving a life sentence on charges of separatism. Tohti, an economics professor and Uyghur rights advocate, has been in jail since 2014. The European Parliament chose him for this activity to foster dialogue between China and the Uyghur Muslim minority, who mostly live in China's western region of Xinjiang. The prize is likely to infuriate China. Beijing has lashed out at any criticism of its policies in Xinjiang, where the government has faced international opposition for placing up to 1 million Uyghurs in what Beijing calls de-radicalization facilities. Tohti, an ethnic Uyghur, has criticized the government for not giving Xinjiang its Turkic-speaking Uyghurs more autonomy. The EU Parliament's prize, named after Russian dissident Andrei Sakharov, has been awarded annually since 1988 to honor individuals and organizations defending human rights and fundamental freedoms. Thousands of Chileans are mounting a movement against inequality in a country once known for being one of the most wealthy and stable regions in Latin America. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy reports.
Tear gas shots echoed through Chile's capital on Wednesday. Riot police moved in on protesters as a nationwide movement against inequality threatens Chile's gold status in the region. Santiago has been under a military lockdown for five straight nights. Officials ordered the curfew to try to quell the unrest. Video obtained by Reuters showed armed police kicking, shoving, and hitting people with batons. Other footage shows protesters taunting the police before getting doused with water cannon. Chile's known as one of Latin America's wealthiest and most stable countries. But tens of thousands have taken to the streets after the government hiked up the price of public transport. Chile's billionaire president has apologized and promised social reforms, a guaranteed minimum wage and an increase in the state pension. But the protesters are demanding more. More than 6,000 people have been charged since Saturday. Several people have been killed. But among days of looting, arson and tear gas, rare signs of unity are giving the movement hope. A protester and a police officer shared an emotional embrace at a rally on Monday. Protesters chanted around them, saying the people, united, will never be defeated.
That was Reuters reporter Michelle Hennessy. Turning to Britain, police raided two sites in Northern Ireland and questioned a truck driver as officers investigate the death of 39 people found in a container at an industrial park in southeastern England. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley has more.
The truck and the trailer with the people inside apparently took separate circuitous journeys before ending up on the grounds of Waterglade Industrial Park in Grays, 25 miles east of London on the River Thames. British police said they believe the container went from the port of Zeebrugge in Belgium to Purfleet, England, where it arrived early Wednesday. A National Crime Agency assessment report on serious and organized crime last year said there was a greater focus on rising smuggling numbers in Belgium after the closure of the Dunkirk migrant camp in 2017. Zaria Shackley, London.
British authorities also say that all 39 people found dead were Chinese citizens. North Korea on Thursday praised the political judgment of President Donald Trump while slamming the rest of his administration as hostile. It's the latest indication North Korea prefers to deal with Trump rather than his negotiators, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
North Korea may have angrily walked away from nuclear talks with the U.S. earlier this month in Sweden. But on Thursday, the North had plenty of nice things to say about President Donald Trump. A North Korean Foreign Affairs Ministry official praised Trump's political judgment and intention, saying his relationship with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un remains special. He said he knows because he recently spoke with the North Korean leader. The problem, the official said, is that the rest of Washington policymakers are hostile to North Korea for no reason. Shin Bom-chul, a researcher at the Asan Institute of Policy Studies in Seoul, says the statement is part of North Korea's long-term strategy.
They believe that only President Trump might accept their proposal, so they continue to emphasize the top-down approach. They always praise President Trump.
North Korea has for months praised Trump while slamming his top officials, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and recently departed National Security Advisor John Bolton. Shin says that is intentional.
They divide President Trump and his officials. By doing that, North Korea is seeking the top-down approach, which means that a summit between Chairman Kim Jong-un and President Trump, they're going to pursue that U.S. concession to North Korea.
Trump and Kim have met three times since last June and exchanged personal letters. Trump at one point said he and Kim fell in love. However, the relationship has failed to transform broader U.S.-North Korea relations. It has also failed to secure progress on eliminating North Korea's nuclear weapons. Talks broke down in February when Trump walked away from a summit with Kim in Hanoi, Vietnam. North Korea agreed to working-level talks in Stockholm this month, but walked away after just one session. On Thursday, the North reiterated its end-of-year deadline for the U.S. to change its approach to the talks. It has also recently warned it may continue nuclear or long-range missile tests. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Zainab Abdul Ahmed, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington, Have a great day.